Okay, we're starting here, 15 lines down, on the top of Kut Pei Amud Aleph. The Gemara begins, Vika D'Amre, which is a continuation of the sugya that we started yesterday with, Shalchu Lei Lavu Shmuel, Yivama Shirakaka Tachlots, that a Yivama that already spit, should then continue with the full process of Chalitza. She's no longer permitted to marry the brothers, and she has to then perform Chalitza. That's her only option. Vika D'Amre, some did say that this is what they sent to Avu Shmuel, Halku Shalchu Lei, Yivama Shirakaka Tachlots, a yevama that spit has to do chalitza, ve'inat zricha larok pam acheret, and she doesn't have to do the spinning again. Ki hahi yevama da'atya lekamei de Rabbi Ami, like this yevama that appeared before Rabbi Ami, ve'yoti Rabbi Abba bar Marmel kamei, and Rabbi Abba Marmel was there. Rakakami kamei tatachlots. She ended up doing the spitting before she did the chalitza on the yevam. Amalei Rabbi Ami chalotzla v'shari la tigra. So Rabbi Ami says, go ahead, do the chalitza, and end off this issue. Take her out of the Beit Din. I mean, we don't need to do anything more than that. Simply do the chalitza and let's finish this process. Samalei Rabbi Abba, Abina, and Meirak. He says, don't you need her to spit? He says back to him, Rabbi Ami, harakakala. She already spit. Betiru kuma bekach. So Rabbi Abba, let's let her spit again, at least so it's in order. What's the big deal if she spits again? So nafak minei churva. Rabbi Ami says back to him, that's going to lead to a terrible outcome. Diamart tiader betiru. If you force her to go back and spit again, Amre Rikika Kamaita Late Ba Mashasha, that you're gonna say, or people are gonna conclude, that the first spitting that she did had no meaning whatsoever, had no bearing on the situation. That's why she had to spit again. Now once you do that, then people are gonna see, she spit, and after she spit, it doesn't mean anything, and then she'll go ahead and perform Yibum after that. Then people also come, Ate Mishrei Chalutza Lachin, and then they're gonna allow someone who did Chalitza or spit to go ahead and marry the brothers, which will lead to a bad outcome, because it's just not true. Once you've done chalitza, you can't go back to the brothers, and they're going to make the same conclusion that when you do the spitting alone, or maybe even when you do chalitza alone, that's not enough, and there they'll allow them to go marry the brothers of Yibum afterwards. V'habin on kisidran. So Rabbi Mama says, don't you have to do it in order? And the order is, first you do chalitza, and then you do the spitting. Kisidran lo me'akvo, that the kaseder is not me'akev, though there is a mitzvah to do it in order. It's not ma'akev the process to do it in order, even though we have a pasuk that says kacha yaseh, which indicates that there is some sort of ikuv over here. As Rabbi Akiva noted, that's kacha yaseh le'ish. That's only with regards to items that are done to the man himself, which is the chalitza. Besides that, nothing else is ma'akev, and therefore all these other items are not ma'akev in terms of the seder. Hu savar dechuya kamedachile. Rabbi Abba Marmam Altar Rabbi Ami was just pushing him away, giving him answers to get him out of there. But then he went out and he found that there was a brayta d'tanya. Ben she'ekdim chalitza l'rikika, whether the taking off of the shoe was done before the spitting. Ben she'ekdim rikika l'chalitza, or the spitting was done before taking off the shoe. Masha asa asui. Whatever is done, and b'diavad, it is good. So he wasn't just making that up, but it was true that the seder was not me'akev, and he found a brayta that supports this idea that the seder is not me'akev. So in this second lashon to Avud Shmuel, not only is the spitting impactful in terms of the fact that it now makes her asur to perform even with the brothers, and then she must perform chalitza, in the second instance, they say that not only is that, but she doesn't have to spit again. Machloket in the Rishonim, what that means, whether she doesn't have to spit again, most of the Rishonim believe that means that she's not allowed to spit again, because otherwise you'll run into the problem of Yami, that nothing can make churva. It'll end up in a bad outcome because of the optics over here. If you say when she spit the first time, then it had no bearing or no meaning, then people will go ahead and perform Yibum after spitting. And then that will lead to people also performing Yibum after Chalitza. So because of that optical problem of making her spit again and then making it look like the first spitting was not relevant, and therefore in other contexts, if she spits, and then if people think that the spitting is not meaningful at all, the first one, then when she spits, they'll go ahead and perform Yibum with this woman, which midoraita is okay. But from that will come a huge problem, which is people will think, just like when you spit, afterwards you can go do Yibum, so too after Chalitza you can go perform Yibum, and that is really an Isur Doraita, and therefore we don't allow her to spit again. That's the version, or the day of most of the Rishonim. Some Rishonim believe that we don't ask her to spit again. If she does spit again, we don't stop her from spitting, and if she chooses to do so, fine, but we're not going to ask her to spit again because we don't want to generate this problem of Rabbi Ami. Now the Gemara continues that a story about Levi, because Levi nafak the kiryata. Levi went out to the villages. He went out to the villages to teach Torah. In other places, as Rabbi Akiva Eger notes, there was a similar concept that Rebbe sent Levi out to the villages to teach Torah. So he took one of his most capable students and sent him out to teach Torah. He went out to the villages to teach Torah, and they posed him questions in halacha. And he couldn't answer any of the questions that they asked him in halacha. Comes back to Rabbi, and he's all embarrassed. He said, why'd you send me out there? I don't have the capabilities of doing this. So then he said, what were the questions that they posed to you? So Levi tells him each of the questions, and in each of the questions, he gives him the answer. So Rabbi said, well, why don't you give them the answer if you can give me the answer? He says, because of all the kavod that they gave me, because you sent me out there and you gave me an approbation saying that I was ra'oi to be there, I became haughty, I got full of myself, and I forgot the halacha. So only now, when I came back to earth, after I was embarrassed by the fact that I couldn't answer it, now I was able to answer the questions properly. And so now, the conduct of the individual impacts their ability to answer halacha questions. When a person is haughty, they make mistakes, they forget the halacha. When a person is an anav, like Rabbi was known for his tremendous anava, then they remember the halachot and they paskin correctly. And so that's why we'll see here that Levi is unable to answer the question. So Levi nafak de kiryata, bo mine gidemet ma'u shetachlot. A woman who's missing her arm, can she perform chalitza? Yivama shirakaga, dam. Yivama that spits out blood, mahu, what's the din? Aval agid lecha et arashum bichtav, emet. I will tell you over, this is the malach saying to Daniel, I will tell you everything that is written down, bichtav emet. In the writing of truth. That implies that there's some sort of writing that's not true that is before Hashem. So what is that writing that's not true? In all of these questions, he did not have a proper answer. He came back and asked in the Beit Midrash. So now they're going to answer or help him answer each of these questions. Doesn't say that she has to do the chalitza, remove the shoe with her hand. Or with her arm, so therefore there's no demand that it be done with an arm or a hand. If she's missing her hand, she can do it with her arm. If she can't do it with her arm, she can do it with her teeth. And that's the psak of most of the Geonim and Rishonim. The Bahag has a shito that you actually have to do it with the right hand and take it off. Tosafot brings that from the Yushami, but says that's only the Chatchila. We prefer she does it with her right hand, but if she doesn't, b'diavad, it's fine, especially, of course, in a case where she does not have the ability to perform the Chalitza with the right hand or arm. Then the answer to the second question, umichtiv, v'yarka rok, it doesn't say that she spittle, but rather she spit. So whatever comes out with the spit, that's fine. As long as she's the one generating it, it should be fine. Now, of course, v'yarka includes rok, includes spittle, but all it's saying here is that it's not exclusive. That not exclusively do you have to spit out spittle, but whatever comes out when you spit out, that'll be fine. Avagid l'cha rashum b'chtav emet, v'chi yesh katav she'enu emet. Is there really writing that's not true before Hashem? Right here it says Lokasha. The Marsha quotes from the Yushalmi that the Yushalmi's question is slightly different. And over there it says, if it's Rashum, if it's already written down, why do I need Emet? And if it's Emet, why do I need it to be Rashum? So what is going on over here? And that's the question. The answer of the Gemara here actually fits better according to that posing of the question rather than what we have in our Gemara. Kan b'gzardin sheishima shvu'ah. That has to do with a gzardin, a decree from God that has a shvu'ah associated with it. That is permanent. That is something that will be Rashum and Emet. Emet means that it's sealed. Kan gzardin shenuim no shvua. Here is a decree that doesn't have a shvua in it. There it's Rashum, it's written down, but it's not necessarily Emet. It's not stamped forever because it's something that can be reversed. It's something that can be undone, and therefore it's not under the category of Emet, but rather Rashum. And according to the Yushalmi, that works out that Rashum means that it's written. Emet means that it's absolute truth. It's something that will not change, period. So that's the case here, where there is a shvua associated with it, it won't change at all. When it's just rashum, that's something that's written down, but not necessarily something that is sealed as the fate. Ked Rav Shmuel ba'ami, damar Rav Shmuel ba'ami, amar Rav Yonatan, minayin gzardin sheish moshua sheinu mitkareya. How do you know that it will not be torn up when there is a gzardin that has a shvua with it? Because we have that from the case by the sons of Eli, which is amar lachen nishbati lebeit Eli. Hashem says, I take a shvua to the house of Eli. There will be no curing, there will be no changing this gzar din against the Beit Eli, through bringing of korbanot or minachot, ad olam, forever. This is going to be permanent, ad olam. And because it says ad olam, now the truth is it says ad olam here, so that indicates that it will be forever. But the Gemara is suggesting is that the ad olam is because of the shvua that was taken or associated with it. Since Hashem says, lachen nishbati, the gzar din with the shvua makes this a permanent gzeirah or din, the gabei beit Eli, something that will not be unwound no matter what you do. Now Rabba, who is a Kohen and is from beit Eli, Rabba darshens that pasuk that says bezevach mincha inu mitkaper. You can't get kapara through zevach mincha. Avol mitkaper hu bedivrei Torah. But if you learn Torah, that can overcome the problem because Hashem only says that zevach mincha will not change the gzar din. But that implies that maybe other things can change it, like Torah. Abaye, who's also a descendant of Beit Eli, amar bezevach mincha inu mitkaper avol mitkaper bigmilut chasadim. Zevach mincha won't work, but gmilut chasadim can overcome this gzera. You should know that there is a machloket about the Girsa in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah with regards to who is considered to be the Kohen over here, whether it's Rabba or Rova. The Gemaras in different places have differences in the Girsaot as to whether it's Rabba or Rova. Tosafot over here mentions the fact that Rabba was a Kohen, and that is what it's referencing. Rabba was from Beit Eli, and it's not Rova who was not a Kohen. And therefore, the Girsa that we have in front of us here is the proper Girsa, which is talking about Rabba and Abaye. So Rabba and Abaye from Beit Eli Kato. They were both from Beit Eli. Rabba dosak b'Torah chayar b'in shnit. Rabba, who was engrossed or engaged in Torah, he was able to overcome the decree to a certain extent up to the age of 40. He lived until he was 40. Abaye dosak b'Torah gumilut chasadim haya chayashit in shnit. Abaye was Oseg both in Torah and Gemilut Chesed, ended up living for 60 years, overcoming the Gzerah. So they are actually Ma'amet Devarayhem. They were actually, through their own Memrot, they actually were successful at breaking the Gzerah of Beit Eli, or the decree of Beit Eli, but through Limura Torah and Gemilut Chesedim. Now Tosfot raises the issue here, as well as in other places, that Rabba did perform Gemilut Chesed, and we have evidence of the fact that he was a big Gomel Chesed. So Tosfot says, either he did Gemilut Chesedim, but he could have done more. For a man of his stature, or someone like him, should have been able to accomplish more Gemilut Chesed. So yes, he did it, but he could have done more. Or the need for Gemilut Chesed over here was successful at protecting Rabba from certain things. But to overcome a decree like that of Beit Eli, that you need extreme Gemilut Chesed. You can't just do regular Gemilut Chesed, you need to do super Gemilut Chesed to overcome it. The Marsha points out something beautiful here from the Mishnah Navot. The Mishnah Navot says, Al Shlosha Dvarim Alam Omeid, that the three things that the world stands on, Al Torah, Al Avudah, Al Gemilut Chesedim. Those are the three pillars of the world. And what happened with Beit Eli is, since they abused the pillar of Avudah, Hashem says that that will not be accessible to them anymore. They will not be able to gain kapara through avodah, and that's what Hashem promised them. Bezevach mincha, you won't attain kapara. But the other two pillars will afford them the opportunity to get kapara, and that's what Rabba says. Rabba says Torah is the first one in that list, so Torah is the one that can circumvent it. And Abaye says that Gemilut Chesed, which is also one of the three pillars, can then circumvent the problem of the decree, because it's not accessing the avodah where the problem was. It's not the midah keneged midah, and therefore using Torah, Gemilut Chesedim, gives you an alternative route to undermine the decree. And that's why they both say that Torah and Gemilut Chesedim are items that can work, even though Zevach HaMincha cannot work. As a sidebar from this discussion, you also see that Gemilut Chesedim is at least equivalent to Talmud Torah, if not greater than Talmud Torah, because Rabba's life was extended, let's assume his life was extended 20 years because of his Limud HaTorah. On the other hand, Abaye's life was extended an additional 20 years because of the Gemilut Chesedim that he did. Now, whether that's 20 and 20 and they're equal, or the incremental years from 40 to 60 are much harder to gain, and therefore you see from that Gemilut Chesedim might even be greater than Talmud Torah. But at minimum, it's equal to Talmud Torah, and therefore we have to keep that in mind, that Bein Adam Lechavero and Gemilut Chesedim has a place that is equal to that of Limud HaTorah, and has to be viewed through that prism. In addition, you also see here that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that when there's a Shvuah along with the Gezar Din, that it's Nechtam, it's sealed for good, you see here that what it means that it's sealed for good means that it still will have impact. You might be able to mitigate it in some ways, like Rabba and Abaye did by extending their lives, but in the end, the Gezerah will still come true or come to fruition, which is that their lives were cut short. They didn't live full lives, despite the fact that they had Torah, Gemilut Chesedim, and all these things. They were able to extend it beyond what would have been without the Torah, Gemilut Chesedim, but they still were governed by the Gzar Din. And that's what it means here, that the Gzar Din with the Shua is never undermined or never reversed. That means that it's never completely reversed. It might be mitigated in some ways, but never completely reversed. Tan Rabbanan, Mishpacha achat hayta b'Yerushalayim shehayu meitim k'ben 18 shana. They used to pass away when they reached the age of 18. Ben 18 l'chupa, it was the age at which they would normally get married. And instead of getting married and having children, they were dying. Meaning that they were not continuing the name, they were being cut off. So they went and told Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai about this plague or this difficult thing that was happening to this family. You're Kohanim, maybe you're from the family of Beit Eli, and that's what's causing the problem over here. Shenemar, because it says there, V'chol marbit beitecha yamutu anashim, that anybody who is born into this household will die while they're still men, while they're still youngsters. There will be no people have gray hair or reach golden age in your family. They will die as young men. So maybe that's what's happening over here. The decree of Beit Eli is affecting this family. So he makes the suggestion to them, L'chu v'yisku b'Torah v'techiu. Go ahead and learn Torah, and that'll keep you alive. That'll overcome the gzerah. L'chu v'yisku b'Torah v'chayu. They went ahead and they were engaged in Torah. They got involved in Torah, and they lived. And their sons passed the age of 18. The family list passed 18. V'yigorin otan mishpachat Yochanan al shmo. And they called their family Yochanan after his name, because Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, had saved, quote-unquote, the family from this premature death by having them get engaged in Torah and learning Torah, and that overcame the decree of Beit Eli, and so they didn't die when they reached the age of 18. Amarav Shmuel Barunya Amarav, minay the gzardin shel tzibur sheinu nechtam. How do you know that a gzardin, a decree against the tzibur, is never sealed? Eino nechtam, it's never sealed. Vaktiv, the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, ki im techapsi benetter v'tarbi lach burit, even if you use soap and lime, try to clean things off, nechtam ovonech lefanai. Your sin is already stained. Now, over here, they're probably playing on the word. Nichtam over there means from the word ketem, which means it's stained. But something that is stained is something that remains there permanently. So it's the same equivalent of saying that a gzar din that is put in place is nechtam. It's sealed. It's permanently there. So even though nechtam, chotem, is spelled differently, the play on the word, number one, is nechtam, nechtam. But also, besides that, a stain has the same effect or impact as nechtam, like a chotem, which is a stamp that is permanent. There you see that the gzar din of the tzibor was nechtam, that it was sealed. Elaminayin shafilu nechtam mitareya. How do you know that a gzar din of the tzibor that was already sealed, that it could be undone, it could be ripped up? Shenemar, mika shem lokeinu b'chol kareinu elav. Who is like God, who we can call out to at any time, and he'll answer our tefillot, and he'll rip up the gzar din? Vakti, what are you going to do with the pasuk in Yishayahu that we read on fast days? Dirshu Hashem b'imatzo. Call out to Hashem, seek Hashem b'imatzo when he's found. So that makes it sound like that you can't call out to him whenever you want. You can only call out to him when he is found. Lokasha b'yachid abitzibur. Depends who is beseeching Hashem. If the tzibur is beseeching Hashem, that's a special power that applies all year round. B'chol kareinu alav. Whenever you call out to Hashem, Hashem will respond. Whereas for the yachid, it's only b'himatzo when God is found. And what is that? Yachid Eimat. When is that for the Yachid that Hashem is found? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avuah, Eilu Asarat Yamim Sheben Rosh Hashanah LeYom HaKippurim. This is the Asarat Yemei Tshuva between Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim, in which Hashem is present, and the obligation to do Tshuva is more pronounced because of the presence of Hashem. And because Hashem is present, therefore the Dirshu Hashem B'Yimatzo, a person can call out to Hashem and beseech Hashem at that time and be Neneh, answered and protected against the Gzar Din. Shalchu Leilu Avuah D'Shmuel. They sent out to Avu HaShmuel. Tosafot says this question was asked after the first question that was posed to him, or the first psak that was sent to him. Here they sent this second psak, which is, Yivamah Shirakaka Dam Tachlot. Yivamah that spits out blood should go ahead and then perform Chalitza afterwards. I mean, it's considered to be spitting, and that disqualifies her from performing Yibum going forward, and therefore do Chalitza. The reason being that there's no way that she could have spit blood out without there being saliva mixed into it. And so there for sure was some sort of spitting that went on over here. Meitave, is that really true? You would think that the blood that emits from the person's mouth or from their member would be tamei. Tamalomer zovo tamei. Ven adam yotze mipivum piyama tamei. Only the zovo, only the emission that comes out is tamei. But the blood that is issued forth from the mouth or from the member, that is not tamei. Elotahor. It remains tahor. So you see here that blood that emanates from the mouth or from the member are not considered to be tamei. That means that the blood that emanates from the mouth doesn't automatically assume there's spittle with it. Because there was spittle, for sure, the spittle or the spit of a zav is mitamei. So where says Lokasha? Kan be motzetet, kan be shotet. Depends if they are motzet, means to suck it out, or be shotet, where it's flowing. Where the blood is flowing out, according to Rashi and many of the Rishonim, that means in the case where the blood is flowing by itself, we assume there's no saliva in there because the blood itself is coming out without any assistance. On the other hand, if motzetzet, if the individual is sucking on the blood or on the wound, and then there's something that comes out of the mouth, we can assume that mixed in that is the saliva as well. And that's what we assume, that there's nothing without saliva associated with it. The Rabbeinu Chananel learns just the opposite way. He says that if it is shotet, if it is flowing out, you can assume that some of the blood has mixed into it saliva. On the other hand, if it's motzetzet, if it is that he's sucking the blood into the mouth, then the only thing he has there is blood and not spittle, and therefore when he spits out the blood, it would just be blood. So that's the Rabbeinu Hananel takes the opposite approach of everyone else, but in general, everybody explains it here that motzetzet would include saliva with it because the sucking would include blood and saliva together. Whereas shotet, where it's flowing by itself or the blood is coming out by itself without any assistance from the individual, over there we will assume that there is no saliva mixed in with the dam. Now the Mishnah continues, cheresh shenechlatz, a cheresh who had chalitza performed with him, and there in the Mishnah it says that a chereshet, and a katan, all three of those individuals who perform chalitza, there is no meaning to it because they're all excluded from the parsha of chalitza. Ish tells us that the man has to be of age. The cheresh and chereshet, either because they can't speak, or the lav bnei dnei aninhu. So that disqualifies a cheresh, a chereshet, and a katan. The Mishnah then categorizes tana in a different grouping and says, tana who performs chalitza is also no good, but she needs to do it again when she grows older. So Tosafot over here already asked the question, why does the Mishnah not include all of these four items together? Why doesn't it put katan, tana, cheresh, and chereshet all in the same category? Because they all have the same din in the end, which is that they're psula. It's a chalitza psula, and you have to do the chalitza again. So why does it segregate out katana from these other items? So Tosafot comes to the conclusion from this that there actually is a difference, that these other items, meaning katan, cheresh, and chereshet, are psula de gamre. That when they give chalitza, there's nothing to it. On the other hand, when it comes to the chalitza of katana, it's only pasul bidyavad, or it's only pasul midrabanan. Midoraita, the katana would be fine. And we're going to see why from the Gemara in a second, why that is. But that differentiation Tosafot brings from the Yerushalmi as well, that there's a difference between bidyavad and the chatchila with regards to the katana. By the katana, bidyavad, it still works versus the other parties, katan, chereshet, chereshet, well, it won't work no matter what. And that's why the Mishnah segregated it out in its own category. That's one possibility. The other possibility is we're going to see now in the Gemara that Rabbi Yossi disagrees with this position of Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah. And therefore, maybe because he disagrees with regards to katana, they segregated it out in order to facilitate the ability of Rabbi Yossi to argue on that piece. Now the Gemara says, Amar Yehuda Marav, Zo Divrei Rabbi Meir. What's mentioned in our Mishnah, that this chalitza of the katan has a certain amount of power in order to posel this woman to the brothers and to himself, doesn't have enough power to free her, and that's what it's meant in the Mishnah, that chalitza ta psula, that chalitza is psula in that case where the katan performs it. That is according to the shita of Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir early on the Masechta we saw back in Daf Tzadivov said that a chalitza ben teisha is get bigadol, that the chalitza of a 9-year-old has the same status as a get given by gadol to a yivama. So it's a disqualifying action, so that they can no longer marry the woman, but it is not a matir for this woman then to be free, and that's why she requires a new chalitza. So that's according to Rabbi Meir, but the Chachamim disagree and say, en chalitzat katan klum. When a chalitza is performed by a katan, it has no meaning or bearing whatsoever. It's as if nothing happened at all. And therefore, the Mishnah here is according to Rabbi Meir, it says psula, but it still has impact. The Chachamim, on the other hand, say that it's meaningless because this individual is a katan. And they don't hold, like Rabbi Meir, that the chalitza of a ben teisha has the din like a get to be gadol. So now the next piece about katana, shecholetzet. This idea that a young girl can perform chalitza, and again, we said it was segregated in the Mishnah, even though the din is the same. Maybe because the din is slightly different. Some of them rabs who dobri Rabbi Meir. Again, this is the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Damar ish katuv parsha. Parsha of Yibum includes the terminology ish. Zim lo yachpotz ish. That ish tells you that the boy, the katan, cannot perform chalitza. He has to be an ish. He has to be of age in order to perform the chalitza. And then Rabbi Meir is makshin isha the ish. We have a hekesh between Isha and Ish, because the Isha is also found in that same pasuk. As the pasuk says, Va'alta yivimto ashara. So it doesn't use the word Isha, but yivimto and the Ish are mentioned in the same pasuk. And therefore we draw a hekesh between Ish and yivimto to tell us that just like by the male, by the katan, he has to be of age to perform chalitza, so too by the female, by the Isha, you'll have to be of age in order to perform the chalitza. Aval chachamim omrim, but the chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir, and said, Ish k'tiv b'parsha, Isha ben gdola ben k'tana. Ish is mentioned in the parsha, therefore a man must be of age in order to perform the chalitza or be a part of the chalitza ceremony. On the other hand, by Isha, it's never mentioned in the parsha, and therefore it's ben gdola ben k'tana. Doesn't matter if she's of age or underage. Either way, the chalitza can be performed with her. So man chachamim. Who are the chachamim that argue on Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Yossi. It's got to be Rabbi Yossi, because now we're going to have a story that by the end of the story, we're going to see that Rabbi Yossi has this opinion. Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Shimon Barabi, who were contemporaries, peers, Hayu Yatve, they were sitting together, they were learning together, discussing learning together. They many times are found learning before Rabbi, Rabbi Shimon's father. That a person davens must have his eyes cast downward. Rashi says here that cast downward because as if he's looking at Eretz Yisrael, or that he's longing for Eretz Yisrael, towards Eretz Yisrael, like it says in the Pasuk in Melachim Aleph, when Shlomo consecrates the Mikdash and davens to Hashem that this should be the center of all tefillot, he says, Vayu einai vilibi sham kol hayamim, that my eyes and my heart should be there forever. That means even post-Churban, that we have to have our eyes and our hearts there facing towards Eretz Yisrael and facing towards the Mikdash. And therefore, you would look downward, and as if you're looking down at the ground at Eretz Yisrael. You could argue that it is a matter of concentration or kavanah, that you look down so you don't wander around and you don't lose concentration on your davening, and that's the why reason that we say that you should look down. But either way, it sounds like enivli bi sham kol yamim, that my eyes and my heart should be there all the time. So either it means eyes literally towards Eretz Yisrael, or it means my heart should be towards Eretz Yisrael, my heart should be focused on the tefillah. And that is done by looking downward. V'chadamar, and one of them said, "Einav l'malot, you should look upwards." Shenamar, nasal levavenu el kapayim, that will take our hearts and our hands and raise them up to Hashem. So you see there that your heart and your eyes have to be held upward. I said that the halchi at Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. In the interim, while they were discussing this, Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi passed by. But my asikto, he asked them, "What are you guys learning? What are you involved with?" Amrulei b'tfilo. He says that in tfilo. Amrulu kachamar abo. This is what my father Rabbi Yossi says about this topic. The person who davens has to put his eyes cast downward and his heart up to the Shemaim. In order that you can accomplish both psukim. That number one is that your eyes are cast downward to be facing, as Rashi says, towards Eretz Yisrael, looking towards Eretz Yisrael, or to improve your concentration. Libo, the lave, is carried up to Shemaim. You have to hold up your heart way up high, that it's up by the heavens. And allegorically, you could say that Einav d'mata means your eyes, which represent the physical world, have to be diminished or cast downward. And the lev, which represents the spiritual world and the connection to Hashem, has to be raised up high. But in order to accomplish both of those, you have to look or face towards Eretz Yisrael physically. But lev, your heart has to be in the Shemayim, has to be connected with the Kodesh Baruch Hu in order for your tefillah to be a great tefillah. In the interim, Rabbi shows up in the yeshiva. Here they were talking before Rabbi gave the shir. All of a sudden, Rabbi shows up to give the shir, and now everybody has to run to their places before Rabbi gives the shir. Inu davu kalilei, they who were light or skinny or were fast, they were able to get yativu b'duchtayu. They got back to their assigned seats in the drasha hall without any problem. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi agav yukurei, because of his heft, because of his weight, he was a large individual. Hamifseyav azil, he was skipping along or trying to get to his seat. He wasn't able to get there quick enough, and therefore the other talmidim were already seated or surrounding Rabbi, and then when he walked by those Talmidim, it looked like he was walking on the heads of the Talmidim, or skipping between the Talmidim, which was considered to be somewhat disrespectful. Only someone of tremendous stature was able to do that, because it was a denigration of the Talmidim to walk over them. So I'm like Abdon, who is the Shamash of Rabbi, one of the Talmidim of Rabbi was his Shamash, and Tosfot says that his real name, as Rishami says, was Abba Yudon, but over here they probably changes it to Abdon, based on the story that's about to come up, that everything was lost to him. This is a somewhat of a denigration of him. So Mihu Zesh Mafsiya Aroshe Am Kadosh. So he calls out to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, who's skipping over and says, "Who's this person who's acting like this, walking on the people's heads?" Amalei Ani Yishmael B'Rabbi Yossi. It's me, Rabbi Shmuel B'Rabbi Yossi. Says it's me, Rabbi Shmuel. If it's not good enough for me, because I'm the son of Rabbi Yossi, I'm the one who's going out there. Shabbat Li Mot Torah Mi Rabbi, and I came here to learn Torah by Rabbi. Amalei V'Chiyat Agun Li Mot Torah Mi Rabbi. Are you really the right individual to learn Torah from Rabbi? Is it appropriate for you to be learning Torah by Rabbi? As the Marsha points out over here, that Rabbi was a huge enough. And the way that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was walking on the people's heads was a sign of a certain amount of haughtiness associated with that. And he says, "Do you have the right midot to be learning in front of Rabbi?" Amalei, so Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi responded to him and says, "V'chi Moshe ha'yagun l'mot Torah mipiyak v'ura?" Was Moshe really so appropriate or of the proper stature to learn Torah from a Kodesh Baruch Hu? And yet Moshe still learned from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, even though he was not up to the level of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Meaning that Moshe Rabbeinu, who is a tremendous enough, just like Rabbi, who learned by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, who were clearly not peers, nevertheless, Moshe took certain positions of authority for himself, and he was nohag a certain amount of srara over the tzibur, justifiably. And therefore, you see that even though Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not as great as God, he still took these personal liberties, and so do I. Even though I'm not as great as Rabbi, I still have the ability to take certain liberties and to act like I am a Talmud Chacham. Samalei, so Avdan says back to Mishon B'chi Moshe'ata, says back to him, wait, are you Moshe Rabbeinu? Meaning that Moshe Rabbeinu, all of Klal Yisrael needed Moshe Rabbeinu because Moshe Rabbeinu was needed by all of Klal Yisrael, therefore he was able to have certain higot of Gava or authority over the people. But who puts you in that category? Well, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, that'd be fine. So Amalei, so Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi says back to Avdan, v'chi Rabcha Elukimo, is your Rabbi God? Meaning, is Rabbi so great that he doesn't need me to be here? He doesn't need anybody else? That I can't come and learn Torah from your Rabbi, Rabbi? So Amarav Yosef Shakle Rabbi, let me tarf to say, Rabbi got his gemul, Rabbi got his midah keneged midah here, the kamalei rabcha velo Rabbi, because he said that you are his Rabbi and not my Rabbi, meaning that Rabbi sat silently while his student, Avdan, embarrassed Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi, and he didn't speak up. And all this while, now Rabbi got his turn, because when Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi spoke to Avdan, he says, is your Rabbi God? And he called him your Rabbi, meaning Avdan's Rabbi, but he didn't reference him as a Rabbi of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi. And we're going to see later on in the story, that's exactly what happens. Midah keneged midah to Rabbi is that he does need Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi to get the psak halacha from his father, Rabbi Yossi. And therefore, Rabbi got his payback there for not speaking up and taking care of this. Adahochi atyo yivama de kameh to Rabbi. In the interim, yivama showed up in front of Rabbi. Amalei, Rabbi, la abdan, pok padka, go see what's going on with this yivama. Levata de nafak. After Abdan left the Beit Midrash, Amalei Rabbi Shmuel, kach amar abo. Rabbi Shmuel says in the name of his father, Rabbi Yossi, this is what my father said, ish katuv parsha, aval isha ben gdola ben ktana. Ish is written in the parsha, so it's only a demand that the man be of age in order for chalitza to be performed, but the isha can be a gdola or ktana because isha is never written in the parsha. Amalei ta lo tzrich kvar hore zakein. He says, oh, if that's the case, we don't need you anymore, Abdan. Because Kfar Hore Zakein, Rabbi Yossi already gave the Psak Halacha that the din is that Ish and not Isha, there's a requirement that the man be of age, not the woman be of age, and this is what we said originally. Rabbi Yossi is the Chachamim's opinion that argues on Rabbi Meir and says that it does matter whether it's a male or a female, versus Rabbi Meir who says that they are Makshina and Isha the Ish. So Amalei, Ta Lo Tzrichat, he tells Abdan, come back in because we don't need it. Kfar Hore Zakein, because Rabbi Yossi already gave us the Psak Halacha. So then, Kambasa Abdon. So when Abdon was coming back, Kambasan Abdon Va'ati, when Abdon came back into Beit Midrash, he was skipping over the heads of the Talmidim, and he was stepping in between them, all over them, looked like he was walking on them. Va'ati Amarle, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, Mitzarich Lo Am Kadosh, Yipaseya Roshe Am Kadosh. Those that the Am Kadosh need, they can step on the heads, or they can walk in this way. Mishen Tzarich Lo Am Kadosh, Heyach Yipaseya Roshe Am Kadosh. You, we don't need you now because we have the locha inside. I mean, Rabbi Yossi says, I have the locha in my hand. We don't need you now. So if it's not necessary, how are you taking the privilege of walking on top of the heads of the Am of the Talmidim? So Malay Rabbi, the Abdan, kum betuchtech. Stand in your place, don't move. Ta'ano ba'otosha nitztara Abdan. Abdan got sarad at that moment. V'tav'ushne banav, and two of his sons drowned in the ocean in a boating accident. And his two daughters-in-law ended up doing miyun. Amarav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Brich Rachmana, the Ksafei Abdan Bahayalma, that Abdan was embarrassed in this world, and that he got his payback in this world, and therefore he didn't lose his Olam Haba, and he got punished right then. Many of the Mefarshim over here explain that the three things that happened to Abdan were Midah Keneged Midah for the things that he did to Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi in the incident over here. The Aruch Lener, for instance, says that Rashi over here claims the reason he got sarad is because he spoke Lashon Hara. On the other hand, the Aruch Lener says it was not that, it was that he was Choshed B'Ksherim. He was Choshed that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was doing the Kvodo to step over the people, but that wasn't really the case. He was trying to get to a spot quickly, but since he was heavier set, then he wasn't able to do it quickly, and because of that, it looked like he was doing it, that he was stepping on the people's heads for his own Kvod, but he really wasn't. He was trying to get to his place before Rabbi started this year. And therefore, he was Choshed B'Ksherim. We know, like by Moshe Rabbeinu, when you're Choshed B'Ksherim, the punishment for that is Tzarat. And so that's why he got Tzarat. His two sons died because someone who gives Kavod to the Talmidei Chachamim, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings up or gives him children that are Talmidei Chachamim. Someone who doesn't treat a Talmud Chacham with Kavod, then he loses out on his children, and so do over here. He was Mevazeh Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi and asked him, are you hagun to learn Torah from Rabbi? Are you good enough to be a Talmud of Rabbi over here? And therefore, since he embarrassed him and denigrated a Talmud Chacham, the Gemur, the Midah Keneged Midah, is that he lost his two children. And then because the issue at hand here was an issue of Miyun, Vayiktana, so it turns out that they didn't need him for that halacha because Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi already had the halacha in hand and they didn't need to send him out. And when he came back in, he was stepping on the heads of the people in order to get back to his place, even though he wasn't necessary for the Am. And therefore he was punished with that his Shtei Kalutav did Miyun when they were Ktanot. I mean that Ikar Halacha, the halacha that we just spoke about, that came about in his family. Because in the end, the pivotal point was one of these two individuals wasn't needed here, either Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi or Abdan. And it turns out that Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yossi was needed here because he helped us in the situation because Rabbi said, go check out this woman if she's a Gdolar Ktana. Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yossi in the end says, we don't need to check it out because my father says, doesn't matter if she's a Gdolar Ktana, she can do Chalitza in either instance. So in the end, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was needed and therefore his psiot were the Tzorech because they needed him there to get the Psak Halacha. On the other hand, Abdan's psiot were lo Tzorech because it wasn't necessary to check whether she was a Gdolak Tana once Rabbi accepted that Psak Halacha of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. And therefore, Abdan was told by Rabbi to stay in your place. Don't come back to your location. You're wrong here. And Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is right. And based on that, he was punished with these three things for the three things that he did wrong in this situation. So I'm Rabbi Ami Midvar Rav Shul Berabi Nilmod from the words of the important one. The important one here is Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Nilmod. We'll learn from this. Ketana choletzet bepeutot. That a ketana already can do chalitza when she's still a youngster. Peutot is a terminology that the Gemara says when a child's transactions are already considered to be transactions because they're considered old enough to conduct transactions with metaltalin. And for a girl, that's around 6 or 7. That means that already at that age, she can do chalitza. Rava amar ashe tegialu not nidarim. That's not true. Rava says, no, you have to wait until she reaches the time where her nidarim stick. That's a year before she becomes of age. So that means at 11 years old and one day, that's when her nidarim stick. From that point forward, she can do chalitza. V'hilchadon, the loch is ashe tevi shtei sarot. The loch is that, no, that only when she is a gdola is she allowed to perform chalitza. And we have to wait until she reaches the age of puberty before she can perform chalitza. And even though Rova in other places believes that you need Shtei Sarot in order for her to perform Chalitza, over here he's saying in the sheet of Rabbi Yossi it should be Onat Didarim, but I myself believe otherwise that it should be Shtei Sarot, and that's how the Gemara concludes that the halacha is that a woman can only perform Chalitza once she has Shtei Sarot. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots, 3 lines down, and the wide lines on Kuf Hei Amud Bet.